these chickens, some of them are programmed to be somebody's meal, and they came into this paradigm to be somebody's meal. And it doesn't matter what you do, they will become somebody's meal, whether it's those little knit things, you know, the little insects that kill them because they eat them, or the cougar, or the coyote, or one of your guard dogs, or baby chicks, the cats, or a raccoon, you know? It's like, it doesn't matter what you do. If that chicken's going to be somebody's dinner, it's going to be somebody's dinner.
Okay, welcome. Welcome to Woo for Thought.
Welcome to Woo for Thought. Tell us what Woo for Thought is.
Woo for Thought are our, well, your essays for lecturians.
And what is a lecturian?
A lecturian is what we are. That's you and me, all of us, you know, who read. We can't walk by a bookstore without getting drawn into the gravity well of all of those beautiful shelves full of thoughts and ideas and concepts and journeys and trips and etc.
Yes. Yeah. So I like to write long essays.
I love to read long essays.
And we decided to do a podcast around these essays.
And that's what you're listening to. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't know, you can go to inelia.substack.com and read them.
Yes, read the essays.
Because obviously you're listening right now. Mm-hmm. And if that's too hard to remember, just type Inelia Benz Substack. It'll take you there.
You will. Yep. All right. And if you like this episode, make sure to subscribe to our podcast and share it
with your fellow lecturians.
Indeed. Welcome to our Woo for Thought podcast. It's a branch of Driving to the Res.
But it's not Driving to the Res.
Nope.
We are not driving anywhere. Not currently thinking of, well, we're thinking of driving somewhere, but.
The Woo for Thought are based on essays rather than newsletters and articles.
Right. If you go to Substack and you look up Inelia Benz, you'll find
Woo for Thought.
Woo for Thought's there, as well as our regular newsletter. Mm-hmm. Newsletters are about a page.
Yeah.
Essays, 7 or 8.
Or more.
Or less.
Sometimes. They haven't been any less, I don't think. But yeah, they're long reads. If you like to really go into the, you know, meat and potato things, or you like a long read, then the Woo for Thought is for you. I created it for lecturians.
Lecturians, yes.
Yes.
I like that word.
Like you and me, honey. We're lecturians. We love to read long stuff.
This one I had trouble reading for some reason.
Yeah, the resistance came for about 4 or 5 weeks.
Yes.
It was interesting.
This Woo should have been out a month ago.
Yep.
And then 3 weeks ago, and then 2 weeks ago, and then last week, and then this yesterday, and the day before, and tomorrow. Uh-huh. Well, I finally just knuckled down and did it.
Yes.
And I got to say, it's pretty good.
Oh, that's good.
Thank you.
Glad you like it.
So let's have a chat about it. Do you want to read some of it? I don't know why.
I hadn't thought about reading it, but I am interested in the title.
Well,
the title is Manipulation of the Mind.
We're in a time where mind manipulation seems to be rampant, and we think it's rampant all of a sudden, like it just started.
But it isn't. No, it's always been rampant, but it's a time where we become aware of it, and we can become aware of it for a reason.
Right.
What is the reason?
Well, clearly the reason is to make the conscious choice whether or not we want to be manipulated in whatever way that is.
Yes, exactly.
Because it's like we know, okay, for instance, advertising is a form of manipulation.
Yeah, everybody knows that.
Everybody pretty much knows that. They got ads on TV to convince you to do this or that, the other thing. Mm-hmm. And I know the majority of us have figured out ways to like skip the ads, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're annoying.
Yeah.
Except for during Super Bowl, in which case they're entertaining.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Either way, at the end of it, I think probably the majority of us say, yeah, I know they're just trying to manipulate me to buy that whatever thing is. I ain't doing that. Mm-hmm. Well, I got news for you.
You do that.
Because the Super Bowl ads were really good. Mm-hmm. I watched them.
Oh, no. How much money did you spend, honey?
Well, they had this ad campaign by Temu. I don't even know what a Temu is.
What is it?
It's a Chinese Amazon, a thingy.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so you got a big, huge box of stuff from Temu because they said they would give me one free thing. It was like $10 a free thing. And so I went there to get my one free thing. And when you scroll through the one thing, there's 100 things that you can pick up for the free thing.
Gosh.
And at least 10 of those things look
you,
really
you
cool.
You have to have.
So you get one of them for free, but then you end up buying 9 more things.
You were manipulated by really good ads.
Yes.
And a good landing
page. I was manipulated by a free gift.
Honey. Yes. Yeah.
And
a
I got
very expensive free gift.
I was quite shocked, really, when I got done with my free gift and I had to check out. I was like, dang, everything is only like $3 or $5. How did it get to be $250?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
oh,
well,
dear.
It was interesting, too, how it came. Uh-huh. Like, you know, how Amazon ships it in the box, mostly air, with the big, like, yes. whatever plastic fluffy things in you. Yes. Like, a something this big in a giant huge box.
I've had those before, yeah.
Temu don't bother with that.
No?
It's like all your stuff, they throw it into a pile and they wrap it in some plastic and ship her out. Hopefully that works.
Well, it's a good job we have sponsors so we can pay for all these ads that Larry listens to.
But you know what?
It's great. Thank you, sponsors, because otherwise we'd be homeless, I think, broke.
We have a lot of incense and incense burners. We have a lot of crystal things and beads.
And lots of presents for our
lots
loved ones.
Lots of gifts and presents.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were all really pretty, pretty cool things. But I was curious about one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, and I don't know how, but somehow that Temu seemed to be like structured so that everything that I liked, it kept showing up.
Even though you'd never
and
been there
never
before.
Never been there before.
That's interesting.
And it was all
it?
Crystals and little beautiful little bottles and beads and
all the things.
There wasn't anything that I wasn't like, that's kind of interesting. That too. That too.
Yeah, logarithms, huh?
Well, they must have some logarithm because how else would it know that unless Temu's all about selling crystals?
I don't know.
I doubt they'd spend $8 billion advertising to sell crystals for
$2. So people who watch football, which are not really into crystals, generally speaking.
Not generally.
So,
So that was, you know, I knew that it was possible to be manipulated by an ad, and I willingly went along with it.
When did you realize you'd been manipulated?
Well, when I started realizing how well I was responding to their advertising and continued to, well, just add one more thing.
Yes.
And now, oh, look, if I just add one more thing, then my shipping's free. Oh, look, if I just add a couple more things, then I get another thing.
Another free thing?
Yeah. So apparently, you know, it works. Now,
that's a type of manipulation we all know about. And at one point or another, we've all fallen for it. Even when we're conscious and aware of what's happening, we still do it, right?
Right. And, you know,
but we do it by choice.
That manipulation, it works. We oftentimes, even though we are conscious of, hey, that's what ads are for, we're not going to pay attention. But then ads have been designed now to be particularly served up to us interested in the things that we're interested in.
Yes.
So every time we kind of like figure it out, then they actually start working. And at some level, do you really object to being informed about something that you actually want?
That is the clincher there, right?
I actually like knowing about things that I want.
Yeah, you do.
Don't you?
Yeah. Well, I come from a different angle. I've always been fascinated by ads because I've always been interested in communication. And also I like to see how people are being manipulated. So to me, most of my life when I used to watch television that had ads in it, I would lose interest in the show and I would come back to the television when the ads were on. Because I like to deconstruct them and have a look and see what they were doing with the ad. I just I still find that fascinating. I personally don't watch television with ads anymore.
Right.
So
pay the extra 11 or 12 or 15 or whatever dollars, right?
To remove the ads, yeah. Sometimes on, like, I think in the YouTube and Amazon Prime television or whatever, I have seen in the past month or so, I saw ads that came up. And I just, because I was interested in the content at the time, I just scrolled past them, right? Muted the thing and then carried on watching the show or the YouTube or whatever. But generally speaking, before that, I would be more interested in the ads than I was in the shows. Because I like to see what buttons they were pushing. And I just found it fascinating how advertising companies were becoming more and more sophisticated in their manipulation methods. But now even most of the shows, and, you know, when we're watching a show, I always tell you.
Or even a podcast nowadays.
Yeah. I'd let you know, oh, that's product placement. Oh, that is manipulation, blah, blah. And it's one of the things, for example, that we've noticed in many, many movies and shows on streaming services is the pissing and puking combo.
You're going to have to explain that to me. It's really weird
how in just about every single show, it doesn't matter what rating it has, in the show, at some point in the series, more than once probably, they will have a man with his penis out peeing that was like unheard of even 2 years ago and puking into the camera or around the camera or in camera puking.
Yeah.
It's just been weird. It's been beyond weird
because it's like so intentional. Like yesterday we watched a show and this guy peed in the toilet and he didn't even have a wiener. He had one of those bags.
I don't understand what those bags are.
Oh, it's a bag that collects his urine and then he pees out of a tube if he's like has a surgery or something.
I've never heard of that. But.
Well, it's what some people do that have that problem with their surgery or something down there that doesn't work. So they need to collect their urine in a bag and then they pull out a hose and pee. So he didn't even have his wiener and he still peed, but he peed with a hose on screen.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I was like, really?
It's really bizarre, isn't it? So that's the type of, we know there's a manipulation going on.
But don't know what.
But think about the feelings that those things give you, and then you'll get some hints about what the manipulation is about.
Okay.
So puking on the screen, apparently,
It's revolting.
It's revolting, but apparently it gives you lots of hits on YouTube and stuff, and good ratings on your shows.
I don't know why, but maybe. I mean,
I think it's because it resonates with how people are feeling. People are feeling revolted that right now. And then it normalizes it. It makes it normal. Oh, yeah, puking and, puking in the screen and feeling revolted is normal. Well, that's why I'm feeling revolted at the show right now, because people are puking. It's not because of all the frequencies that are coming out of it are revolting, but it's because there's somebody puking. So it could be something to do with that.
I guess there's been a saying, I've heard it before, that a reaction is better than no reaction.
Yeah, and things
have gotten to the point where so much stuff is normalized, they need to do something shocking.
Yeah.
And so it's a shock.
Yeah.
And so when you get shocks, I guess that's part of like why people watch disgusting things sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like my daughter will watch those horror movies, the slashers.
Mm.
I was like, what in the heck are you watching that for? Come on.
To feel something, right?
I guess it's to like move the needle.
Mm.
Maybe.
But the ads to me came from that perspective and shows as well. And a lot of times I spend most of my time watching a show looking at the constructs and the manipulations that are being given by that show. It's quite fascinating to me from that perspective.
Also, it can tend to put people in that state of frequency that's lower, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basically lower their frequency, which is pretty much the goal.
It is the goal.
So you got fairy bait and then puke and pee all over you.
Yeah. Gross.
Anyway, close your eyes when that part comes.
Yes. Oh, fast forward and close your eyes. Jesus.
It's like, they're surprised you too. It's like, no, not again.
I know.
Come on now. It's not that necessary. Please, guys. But
how does that advance the plot?
How is that helping here? That's a good way to
question things. How does that advance the plot? So you have a plot for your life, right?
Yeah.
And when you're scrolling through the internet, you're going to get 10,000 ads. And when you see one that grabs your mind, then think about how does that advance your life? How does that make you the best version of yourself? And then go from there.
Okay. Well, sliding out of the revulsion for a moment. I mean, the ads and manipulating us and being conscious of them and agreeing to it at some level, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that, I don't remember if you answered the question, but do you like being shown things that you actually want?
I don't get that a lot, actually.
You don't get shown things that you actually want?
No.
I do it to you all the time.
I think it's because I've switched off the share my information in all of the devices.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You don't get the ads that tell you this is what you want. I see. Oh.
Occasionally, I'll get an ad for a video that is related to what I've just watched.
Speaking of, I got somewhere to go with that. But,
okay.
Well, you know, we've also heard that when we talk about something, then all of a sudden we start seeing ads about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or
do we though?
Do we though? Yeah, exactly.
Did so in my opinion, what I have observed is that the person is given a lot of data and information at a subconscious or subliminal level. And then that will bring about a type of discussion in their mind, thoughts that they think about. Like, for example, let's use the example of a red car. So let's say they're giving you a ton of subliminal information about red cars through tiny little messages on your screen.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, you start spontaneously thinking about red cars. And then when you turn on your computer, you see red cars everywhere. But they were there before. You just didn't notice them until the subliminal messaging came through. And it finally hit. And so, then you notice them. They're everywhere.
So this has kind of happened to me this week. But it was about Plato's Cave.
Plato's Cave.
This is in your article, Plato's Cave.
Not Plato.
Not Plato. A Plato cave.
Plato's Plato, Cave.
Plato's. The Plato Cave.
Okay.
So Plato's Cave, the allegory of the cave.
Yes.
I can't begin to tell you how many times Plato's Cave's come up in my podcasts I was listening to and the shows I was watching and the YouTubes.
Mm-hmm.
At least 7 or 8 this last week and a half.
Okay.
And in conversation just even last night.
Mm-hmm.
It come up in conversation. Not related to this.
Mm-hmm.
This woo is like a month or two old.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, every other conversation has Plato's Cave and Allegory of Cave in it. The vaccine guys, the virus people, the trucks in semis in the mud people. I'm telling you, everyone is talking about Plato's Cave.
Uh-huh.
Is that like why? And it's in your article too. I was reading through it and I got to Plato's Cave. It's like, no, not again.
Well, yeah, you know.
But it's illustrating of something, right?
Yes.
People are aware of it.
Yes.
It's like they're conscious of it.
Yeah.
And do you have is it a red car, Plato's Cave, or is it something else happening?
In your particular situation?
Yeah.
So from what I remember, this allegory is used a lot and it has been used a lot. That's why I used it, because it's common. People know about it. And they know about it because they hear it all the time. And yeah, like you said, this article is several months old. We're doing the podcast today for it, but it's been out there for a while.
Yeah, it has.
It's because it's so familiar. I used so many times that I used it in this article to show the manipulation of the mind and from the perspective of the creator, if you see it happen, how do you let people know? Right. And I made a little story too.
I saw that story. It was cute.
Yeah. It's a little story of where he came up with the story, you know, which to me that's a bit that I wanted to express. But yes, I used it on purpose because it's so well known. And I have heard about it like every
now and again.
It's like, no, like a lot. I hear about it a lot. There's a lot
know.
Of things that I hear about. That's one of them that I hear about a lot.
I'm telling you, in my entire life.
How long have you had this article
from
that you had to read?
A month.
Right. But, so how long has this story been popping into your mind?
A month.
Right.
But in my entire life before that, I was cognizant of what a Plato's cave thing, allegory, whatever was. Mm-hmm. But I had never once heard anybody bring it up to me in conversation.
Or maybe you didn't know.
I never once said, hey guys, let's go catch some fish over there. It's just like Plato's cave. Never once did they say that to me either. Like, my boat's broken. We should go in the cave. Plato's cave, you know about that, right? Let's go over there and, you know, look at what's really going on. Not even. It didn't happen. But this last month, every other... I'm Substacks. I mean, I'm to all kinds of topics. They all had the allegory of the cave in it. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was, it's not the red car because nobody's trying to advertise Plato's cave to me.
Oh, right. I see what you mean by is it the red car right now.
Right. But where has it been placed? Who's inserted it a month ago into the collective so that it starts popping up everywhere? Thought so.
How you want to be sad? Come on.
See, the thing is, here, let me tell you. The thing is that I didn't read it first. I was exposed to all these other people who I have some connection through reading, Substacks, the subscribe stars, doctors. You can't even imagine the people. Mm-hmm. And all of them are got Plato's cave on their tongue. Mm-hmm. And then last night, I mean, when we were talking with the mystics, Plato's cave comes up, of course. So then I read this article. I was like, oh, Plato's cave again. So this has already been out for a month. So
no, it's been out for several months, actually.
It's been out for a while. So one of the little, I guess, parts at the end of the little story that you made is something about the shadows on the wall. If you don't know Plato's allegory, I suggest you go read this Woo.
Yeah.
Go down there a little way. There's a nice little short story. It's only... what, about a half of a page little short story?
The short story is about, less than
and it'll
half
give
a
you
page.
The nuts.
Yes.
Maybe it might be worth reading that. What do you think?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, yeah, let's read that little short bit.
Yeah, good plan.
Okay, let's see. Okay, let's see if I have it pulled up, which I should. Well, here's how you get there. I'm going to type it. Go. I-N-E-L-I-A. That's Inelia. B-E-N-Z, and then I'm going to write Substack.
On your search engine?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness, there it is. I'll push that. Okay, I'm not going to... I already subscribed, thank you. And then there's 3-4 home notes. Woofer, I'm going to go to Woofer Thought. Now I'm down 1, 2, 3. This is called Manipulation of the Mind. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a pretty cool picture.
It does. Oof. Ilya created that picture with an AI.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, it's really nice. Okay. Oh, and the AI pictures are really fascinating to explore.
Yes, they are.
For the manipulation of the mind. It's really cool.
You ready? You want me to read it or you want
to? Sure, you go ahead.
Alrighty. Plato, not Plato.
Plato
was a young and intelligent man who worked and exercised endless research and dialogue to try to figure out the reality of the world. One warm summer's night, after tirelessly working on a question of extreme importance, he walked home. His mind was still busy, and he felt the frustration of the resistance his thoughts were stimulating in his fellow minds and their belief systems while he walked through the dark streets of Athens. As he turned the corner, he saw shadows of paper cutouts upon a large wall. In front of the wall sat adults and children, all deeply engrossed in the story unfolding in front of them. He walked toward them and sat at the back, next to the shadow maker and his cutout figures. Plato smiled, and for a few minutes, he too became engrossed in the story of being told. He laughed and gasped as the story unfolded. For those few minutes, he forgot all about his troubles, arguments, frustrations, and life. As the story finished and the shadows bowed. Oh yeah, they bowed at the end.
Yes.
The fire was put out, making this wall into just a wall. He looked around and saw the people chatting and still deeply savoring the experience they had just had. In that moment, he came back to reality and his life, his thoughts, his frustrations, and reality crashed into him. In that moment, he saw that he was different to all these people, some of whom were convinced that the story they had just been told was real, or at least talking about it like it was indeed real and not just a bunch of shadows on the wall. He wondered as he saw that audience walk away, how much of the world he was experiencing was simply shadows projected by some other hand onto a wall he called real or reality, and how fast he had replaced it, albeit for a few minutes, with a simpler black and white two-dimensional reality, and how much simpler, easier, and less stressful that two-dimensional world had felt when he was in it. He bought a couple roasted chestnuts from a vendor who was packing away for the night and walked the rest of the way home, filled with the inspiration of explaining what he had just experienced to all those who would listen. So, it's basically what you think the allegory of the cave is like and about, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's nice and it's entertaining and it's true, but, you know, when we fast forward that allegory to what's happening now, you know, the cave wall is clearly your tablet or TV or Amazon or whatever. And the guy that's running the sticks, he's the manipulator in some way, representative of, even though, you know, that reminds me. Remember we watched that one author explain the storylines to us?
Oh, yes.
He said, here's how the story goes. If you want to, you know, sell a million books, you know, starts here. It gets really good.
And then it crashes down
to the worst thing ever. And then it has to build back up out of that and better than before.
That's a Western story.
That's a story.
Hollywood, perfect. You would sell a billion books if you get it like that. Yes.
So the stick guy is using that storyline to make his play, you know, entertaining for the audience.
Not necessarily in Greece, though.
Well, not in Greece, but not in France. I mean, we watched a few France
ones. Not in Ireland.
It goes like this.
It starts real low and then crashes down to terrible, horrible nastiness.
It can't get worse, then it's over.
And it's over. They don't call it Greek tragedies for nothing.
God, it's so
true. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I remember we started to watch a couple of shows and found out it was French or whatever.
We're like, no.
Let's just stop this movie. It's okay. it's great right now.
And so we'll just stop watching it now.
Because it ain't going to get better.
It's not going to get better.
It just is as good as it's going to get.
Yes.
It's done with that. It's true, though. Yeah. So the manipulator that's holding the sticks and playing the show, you know, when they're well trained, they just replicate the storyline of, I mean, why do we like that storyline? I mean, why do the French, the Greeks, or the whatevers like the one that crashes and burns? And why do we like the one that comes up at the end in hope? Are these manipulations that have been placed from the get-go for an entire collective of people?
Culturally speaking, in my opinion, my humble opinion, I've lived in Ireland, and I was also familiar with the Greek tragedies because it was something that we studied in high school.
Yeah.
So from the perspective of what was going on at a cultural level, and from my own education, having been brought up by a king whisperer, it felt to me that all the stories that being especially the ones that children in school are forced to read or watch, they give you a certain program of what life is about. And what I saw was that when it comes to Irish or Greek, if you look at them at a European level, those were traditionally, I don't know about these days, but traditionally, at least in the 80s, were the poor countries. The Irish and the Greeks were the poor people in Europe. And you can add the Portuguese there too. I don't know how it stands. I mean, I don't know if the Portuguese have tragedies or not. But what I saw was programming the masses to thinking that life is just going to get worse. Right. And there's nothing you can do about it. So powerlessness and lack of hope. So they don't act. They don't take arms. They don't do something to better their lives. That's what I saw there. And with regards to North America and how everything great ends up really great, the American dream at the end, or, you know, the boy gets the girl at the end, or the girl gets the boy at the end, or, everything's great. And
everything works out great.
Yeah, fantastic.
Even better than it started.
Yeah, even better than it started. I think that is the great part of why so many people around the world want to come to America and live here. And it's part of the infusion and invasion of the land by foreign interests. So when I was very small, I learned from my family and their views and education, my father's part of the family, that land, holding land, was useless unless you had good workers to exploit the land. And then you could make money. You could mine for gold or silver or copper, or you could plant plants and sell them and make, you know, a lot of money. But land by itself was valueless. So they had issues and problems bringing people to the Americas, because we're talking about South America now in my own family, to put in the fields to work. They had a lot of issues and problems doing that. So yeah,
was the Mapuches not very good at being
no put Native into the fields Americans to work. Generally speaking,
yeah.
They were not easily persuaded to work for another person, right?
That's true.
So it was, they call them lazy and whatever, right? Yeah. So there was a couple of things they did. In Chile, they ordered by a royal order that all Spaniard men needed to have sex with Indian girls and make mestizos, which were half Spanish and half Indian, and then put them to work in the land, their own children.
Or like probably Australia, where they sent all the criminals there, according to their definition of who was a criminal. Yeah.
But that didn't do enough workers, so they created this story of gold. And they sent all these tall tales and mountains of gold back to Europe saying, look, it's here to be, you know, for anyone. Come over and become a gold digger, you know, and become rich. And that brought in tons and tons of people. Or it's like the land of freedom. In Europe, you can't own land, but here you can. They can become farmers and landowners when over there you can't. So a whole bunch of people came. And then they had workers. And when they got there, there was no gold, right? And there was no land for them. And they had to work for somebody else. So it's like that's still running. The better life here in the Americas is still running. And it comes through all these movies and shows and storylines, because the people who came here didn't come here for tragedy. They came here like a genetic or like lineage level, family level, for a better life here. So if you try to sell them tragedy here, it's not going to work. They're not going to watch your movies.
Right. And so some way you can think that the population in, well, Ireland maybe, right? Are they attuned to like these great tragedies or anything?
Yeah. So huge, right?
Right.
And then you give them the American story. So what happens?
That's like
they'll leave.
Gold, right? It's like,
yeah, they leave.
There's no point in staying here. It's just going to get worse.
Right. So there's more Irish descendants in the world than there are Irish people in Ireland.
Yeah.
By millions.
That's
by
funny.
Millions and millions and millions.
There's more Irish who aren't Irish than there are Irish who are Irish. Is that what you're saying?
No, there's more Irish descendants around the world. And actually born Irish, there are in Ireland.
That's quite funny.
From college, when I graduated in Dublin, in Ireland, I went to university there. And a year or two after graduation, we looked and saw how many of the graduates were still in Ireland. From the men, I think like probably 60 or 80% of the men graduates were still in Ireland. And from the women, it was ridiculous. It was a very, very low number of women graduates who were still in Ireland. So in Ireland, the women have the worst deal. They're downtrodden, they're maltreated, they don't have a good time there. The country's not created for them. And those are the majority that leave are women. I mean, there's actually whole villages in Ireland that there's no women. There's just men. And they have to import wives from other places.
I suppose it's a little along the lines of, I mean, it seems like it would be a tough sell to try and get an entire population to go for all these tragedies. It's like, but at some point, you know, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy of misery loves company. It's like, it's bad. Yeah. And I want to see someone else who has it worse. And then I won't feel so bad about my bad.
Possibly, maybe. So
maybe that's how you get to sell.
But because, I know, like, that what I was getting at is a cultural programming. It's all about cultural programming.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. It's culturally programmed.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they have to agree to be programmed.
Yeah, that's why you're born there, right?
Right.
And it's not everybody who gets programmed that way, right? There's a lot of people who leave those places. And there's lots of people who succeed in those places. So not everybody is not like a... But the general masses, the sleepier masses that drink beer and watch TV all evening after work, those are the ones that are easily programmed. They're there to be programmed. They're not to be awake.
That's the players in the ponds. Remember the Enlightenment book we're reading?
By who was it?
He's the author of the MMS stuff. I can't recall his name.
Yeah. But yeah, he talks about that, doesn't
he? Yeah, and there's a sense, his words were players.
Players, pawns, and something else. What was the other one?
Pieces.
Pieces.
And demon pieces.
And demon pieces.
So like, players are like you who are listening to this. You're awake and aware. You understand the nature of reality, that it's manipulated and it's consensual and agreement and choice. And you can dig under the surface and say, oh, that's how that operates.
Exactly.
Oh, look at what's going on here. And the pieces are like presidents and Elon Musk's and Trump's, and those are like pieces, or they might equally be demon pieces. But the pieces are like the manipulators, the ones that are
pulling the strings.
Well, being told what strings to pull.
Ah, okay.
Right. And they're in charge of pulling those strings. And then the pawns are the ones that are seeing the strings being.
They're
seeing the cave wall and they're like entranced with it.
Right.
But they don't know that it's a cave wall.
Right.
Or if they do, they'll just drink some beer or something.
to make it go away.
Right. They're willing pawns.
Yeah.
Willing pieces. And then the demon pieces are, you know.
What about the players?
Well, the players are those like us that say, oh, there's pawns and pieces and demon pieces.
So they can see the larger
picture. Can see their Play-Doh.
Their Play-Doh? Play-Doh,
honey, Play-Doh. Play-Doh is a player.
Okay, got it.
Some of the pieces know their pieces. Some of the pieces are pawn pieces. They don't even know their pieces, but they're in a position to be a piece. And in his, I think, book, the demon pieces know their demon pieces, but they're just obviously dark workers who know their dark workers. And therefore. Team Dark, I guess.
Yes, indeed.
And most of the manipulation, basically, in the definition of manipulation, people will not necessarily consider manipulation to be a light process. Because if you have to manipulate someone into being good, then it kind of like, it's like power over others.
Yes.
To be the... your judgment of what they should be.
Right.
Instead of them having their, you know, their choice of their experience, you're going to decide for them what experience they're going to have. And because your decision is that they have to be light and good and pet puppies, that everybody must do that and you're going to manipulate them all until they do. It's the same manipulation. It's just the flip of the coin on that one, right? Because, hey, how many times in history have you ever made a mistake or been a little wrong?
Billions.
Well, I can't say I've been wrong billions of times, and I know you haven't.
Oh, I have. I made some real whoppers of a boo-boos. Yes, big boo-boos.
Not since I've known you.
Oh, my gosh. Like massive boo-boos.
Mostly I was like, honey, how come you're always right? All right, but okay, we'll give you a few boo-boos. Let's just say that.
Yes.
But the point is like you're manipulating people to do the right thing, and you are not even certain. Because you can make mistakes too, right?
I'm not manipulating people to do the right thing.
I'm educating people
to understand that they need to take over that manipulation for themselves.
Well, not only that, it's like taking over and being manipulative for somebody's own good.
That's not good. No.
It's already bad. So,
yeah, you don't want to do that.
You're as a light being or a light.
Show them the manipulation mechanics. Show
these are the manipulation mechanics.
And then they can choose.
Right? And they can choose to enjoy the cave paintings or not. They
or
can
step choose out to after like a good show.
Go to right? Temu and get all the crystals in the world for 99 cents each or whatever, or not.
Yes.
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 But I guess the point is I've found on multiple occasions people who I would assume are light workers, and I wouldn't even assume, but I know that they feel like they're doing what they think is best for everyone, mm-hmm. find themselves on the stick of, hey, how do I manipulate people into doing what's right? Which is a super slippery slope, I just gotta say.
Yeah. Do you have an example?
Sure. Let's all buy this book. So that's number one on Amazon. So all the sleepers have to notice it and buy it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, that's like a tactic to try to make a point in some ways visible to more people, but
it's silly.
It's silliness, really. Yeah. It's the intent is to manipulate other people's minds into coming to the conclusion that we've come to because that's the right one.
Mm,
it's an assumption for their experience. Their experience on this planet is to be ours is and not what theirs is.
I thought that it was to make the book more visible to people who are looking for it so it wouldn't be hidden behind 100 pages of search engines.
Nope. That's not how it's told. Presented? Well, you listened to Dr. Cowan presented it, right?
Yeah.
When he talked about it, what was his reason that he wanted everyone to buy it at the same time on Saturday morning?
So it would be number one in the virology thing.
So it would be number one in virology thing.
But as I interpreted it to be, so it's not hitting under 20 pages of useless items, you know, when people are looking for it.
Right. But
I could be wrong. You know, I see the light.
Let's dig into that just a little bit, though. Yeah. When I look at it, I see, okay, so this is the use of it is a sense is in essence a manipulation for a different purpose than what's the information in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Buy it so that other people will find it. And so your appeal to how you're
I guess the interpretation you have is people who are not looking for it now have it in their first page. When I looked at it, was somebody who's actually looking for it will find it easily. So, yeah, there's a big difference there between the two.
It's the affirm the way others see us doesn't have to influence us. And so
I see the difference of, yeah.
So if he, for example, said, hey, you know, they wrote this book. It says a lot of the things we talk about. It puts it in a nice, concise way. I really like this book. It's really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you'll find it interesting also. For this and that reason, then that doesn't feel like that feels like data.
Mm-hmm.
And manipulation is let's buy it as a mission to make sure everybody gets it. So I'm not buying it because I like the book or what's in the book, although I do. If we all buy it together, then everyone else is going to see it. Mm-hmm. So it has a different motive, right? Its intent is to manipulate people to buy it en masse, to show everybody it en masse, to make everybody change their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally.
Yeah, I suppose we have to bring in the context of what the book is, which is to change people's minds about something. So, yeah.
Right. And I'm not saying that it would be.
So here's the thing.
I got one thing to say first.
All right.
Okay. And it's, can there be more than one narrative in a split? Like, who controls the narrative controls the masses?
Ah, that one, yeah.
Right. So it feels to me like there that manipulation is an attempt to put a narrative in a
place it doesn't
collection
belong.
Of in a narrative. Can I get the words out?
No.
Put can this you? Narrative
uh-huh.
in a collective who has a different choice of experience.
Right. Yeah. Right. No, that'll never work.
Well, that'll never work. That'll never work.
No. That's why it didn't even enter my mind that that's what was going on. But you're probably right. That's what probably is what's going on. So from a different angle.
Yes.
If I said Team Whisper, my latest novel, which is actually created for the masses, right? Yeah, everyone.
Yeah. Everyone.
If I said everybody go into Amazon and buy Team Whisper on March the 29th
yep.
in the morning, and buy several copies and send it to your friends on that morning so that it appears on the bestseller list for that morning and it appears as a choice for millions of people who wouldn't otherwise see it, would you say that's a manipulation?
Well, only if the what's in it and why I would like you to buy it, and if you're going to buy it, let's try and put it together so more people can see it. They're like recruiting, you're recruiting those who want to buy it as a group for another purpose also, not go buy it and go buy multiple copies just so it becomes number one. So people who are victims of misguided thoughts and beliefs will be woke up from their stupor.
Mm.
You know, there's a different motive.
Yeah. So is this still a manipulation, do you think?
No.
Right.
He's not trying to make a collection who a collective who doesn't want this information to disrupt their reality
mm-hmm.
have to see it. You're mm-hmm. not trying to force this into other people.
Right. Yeah, I think that's my opinion of what you were sharing about Dr. Yeah. Cohen's call for this book to be bought. And that's how I saw it. All people who are interested in it will be able to find it easily now.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But I honestly, can see that it probably isn't that because of what he said. Yeah.
The mere fact that he brought the book up and mentioned it more than once is enough for everyone who is interested in his circle, right?
To buy it.
Mm-hmm. No manipulation of others needed.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a huge ego or there's a huge desire to change the world to match the one that we want.
Yeah, it's not right? going to happen.
Whatever one it is that we want.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, this is a world that has the beliefs that one group holds dear, right? Mm-hmm. The real truth, not the pretend truth, the real truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone must accept the real truth.
Right.
Even though that's the basis of our reality is there are more than one truths. They're consensus realities. And that's mm-hmm. the basis of why we have a split is that these are not compatible realities, mm-hmm. right? Or they've moved out of the possibility to be compatible, something along those lines.
Right.
Or the host of the reality is tired of hosting the crap one. However you want to say it. In essence, there's this itch that tends to come in. And I think that especially with those who might consider themselves influencers,
mm-hmm.
to influence the ones who've chosen a different reality to change mm-hmm. their mind,
yeah.
which in my mind, after spending a lot of time with you, I see is no different than the manipulation the other side's doing for the same reason. It's like to change your mind to do what it is they think's true.
Right.
So
we can easily fall into the
trap
of, you know, the old paradigm, power over others. It's so easy to do. It's like what we were talking about the other day, you know. It's easy to turn a beautiful bride or groom of Gaia and, you know, light worker who doesn't kill bugs into a killer if they see somebody torturing and killing Bambi.
Yeah, it's over. It's on
over.
Like Donkey Kong.
It's not
like
Donkey Kong.
Killer, we're going to torture him
yes,
or her.
And shoot him.
Shoot him.
Yes.
Yeah, with an arrow in a place where it's going to hurt for a long time.
Yeah. It's or dogs,
teach
you know,
them.
Like what we saw. Like we've seen it more than once. A person who's really nice, great person and whatever, cares about animals and loves animals, takes care of them, rescues animals and everything. And then they have a whole bunch of pet chickens and then a neighbor's dog comes in and start torturing and killing the chickens and they come out with a gun and shoot it. It's like, where did that come from? Where did that come from, right?
Who's responsible for the chickens?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay. We have seven giant docks and huge fences
to protect our chickens.
And we did buy two guns.
We did.
And one of them was a shotgun and one of them was a 308. Shoots a long ways.
With
a scope.
Yes.
So if they're way over there and they might be thinking about touching our chickens, we're going to blast the shit out of them. And so one night we did, right? Except for here. Guess what?
You shot to miss.
Not even close to. It's like, this thing's just a loud firecracker, guys. I wouldn't really get you. But they perceive it as a threat. So, you know, that's fine.
Yes.
I don't mind if they don't come eat our chickens. Yeah. And it is.
It's freaking chickens. I mean, I've got to tell you.
They're so manipulative. Chickens are the worst manipulators I've ever met.
It's like you get these pet chickens and then you get more and then you get more because the babies are so cute. And then there's like a ton of roosters and you're not going to kill the roosters because you're a light worker.
And
you're not
going
to eat the chickens, the old ones, because you're a light worker and you want them to have a nice retirement life.
And the chickens bribe you all the time with these freaking eggs.
Yeah. And they bribe you with really fresh, happy eggs. And then, you know, you build...
They send you to the ranch store to buy organic food, which costs way more than your eggs
at
the store.
At the store.
Even the organic eggs at the store?
Yeah, the food for the eggs, oh my God, it's so expensive. And then you pay $10,000 for a fence because that will stop cougars coming in and killing your chickens
and then the hawk coyotes.
The hawk comes in. So then you pay another $10,000 to cover that giant area because, you know, you want them to have the freedom to be able to hang out. And then the chicken gets out and gets eaten, right? So it's like these chickens, some of them are programmed to be somebody's meal. And they came into this paradigm to be somebody's meal. And it doesn't matter what you do, they will become somebody's meal, whether it's those little knit things, you know, the little insects that kill them because they eat them, or the cougar, or the coyote, or one of your guard dogs, or baby chicks, the cats, or a raccoon, you know? It's like, it doesn't matter what you do. If that chicken's going to be somebody's dinner, it's going to be somebody's dinner. I remember once we saved a chicken that was in bad shape.
Oh, yes.
She was sick and we healed her back and we kept her separate from the rest because all the other chickens wanted to kill her.
Because she was injured, you know, chickens are
jerks. So we healed her. We spent a lot of time and effort getting her better. One day she was all better, all her feathers were back nice and she wasn't getting attacked anymore. We let her out. Within a day, a coyote had gotten her and killed her.
We made a nice, healthy chicken dinner for that coyote.
Yeah. So it's all, there's no victim aggressors around here. That's what I'm trying to say.
But we're still not killing them and eating them ourselves.
We refuse to eat them. We can't eat, you know, Fluffy and Princess and Pio and... In Lucky, we can't eat any of them.
But
right?
I will say this. If it was like that dystopian world ever showed up where you're supposed to have food and et cetera, et cetera. We have plenty of food if we needed it, which means we don't need it.
Hmm. Well, we do eat the eggs.
We indeed do eat the eggs. You don't kill the goose that laid the golden eggs.
Right.
Just eat the
eggs.
And
we gave up on fences. We actually fenced the dogs and not the chickens.
This is kind of... Yeah, we
backwards.
Did that.
We did.
A little bit backwards because
the dogs also attack people. So, yeah.
Well.
But they do keep bears and cougars and coyotes away because they don't like their bark. So, you know.
It turns out we live in a complicated world with complex systems and a lot of agreements and choices going on. And the manipulations never cease. The dogs manipulate us too.
Yeah. And so the chickens run around free in the forest, and apparently they're forest birds. Chickens are forest birds. And if we're lucky, we find the eggs. If we're lucky, they lay them in the nests that we put out there, which also are very expensive because they're the best nests with, you know, all these herbs that are really good for them and whatever. Yes. You know.
And there's like whatever.
Diatomaceous earth.
Diatomaceous earth to keep the bugs off. Yes. And then there's this like yogurt stuff that you put on there to whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
All the things.
All the good stuff.
Yeah.
Those are the happiest. They are happy chickens.
And the coop that Hobie built for them, you know, beautiful coop on wheels, solid.
Painted to match.
Painted to match the shaman shack.
Yeah. Same trim.
Yes. Same trim.
Same roof.
Mm-hmm. All the things.
Those chickens.
Those
really
are the most expensive eggs that I mean, even we got the guard dogs to
for the eggs.
And those were, I mean, one of our guard dogs, she's had so many health issues. If it hadn't been for our supporters sending us cash, we'd be broke and homeless right now because
she would have ate that money up.
Yeah. That dog, Jesus. And vet care is insane.
Well, we've adapted our vet care. But I mean, the surgeries, emergency things are different.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean.
We have saved doing our own vet care for minor things. We have saved tens of thousands of dollars, I have to say.
Yes.
But my gosh. Yeah. My gosh. The surgery. Nah.
Well, it's exploring things, right? And I think at some point, when we're talking about manipulation of the mind, we always think it's just other people manipulating us. But no, clearly but chickens do.
Can manipulate you.
And
and dogs.
And dogs and cats, most definitely.
Yeah.
And at some point you said something about trees. Trees somehow manipulated to be very interesting to us. So they provide everything for us that we like, so that they become very prolific and replace those
trees and cats.
Those funny little grasses that used to grow back in the day. What were those grasses called?
I don't remember.
Well, if you look at the old pictures of the trees in the past, it was these giant horsetail things.
But yeah, certain...
Also horses and cows, right?
Yes, definitely cows and pigs and chickens.
How did horses lose out? Who manipulated us better than a horse? Horses used to be like, everyone has multiples of them.
Yes.
There are so many horses that you would take your horse and go drop it off somewhere and get some other horse. And it's like you just, I guess, turn them in and trade them or something.
Yeah.
I don't know how that worked.
They used to eat them.
And eat them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know how I like the Pony Express, you know, they ride their horse and get tired and then they switch horses.
Mm.
And I thought that, you know, when you went somewhere and you wanted to go in the hotel, it's like they come out and say, do you want your horses to have hay or grain or whatever? It's a whole industry, right? Plus, how about their shoes? Should we check their shoes and their oil?
Oil.
All that stuff is like got replaced by a different manipulation. Cars can manipulate you now, and that's not even an animate object.
Yes.
I was watching Cars this morning.
You were.
Racing on a Nuremberg.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cars can manipulate you. So, what other notes do you have for this article? I saw you wrote quite a few.
Yeah. Well, all right. So, perception of the masses and perception of your work. Your work is not for the masses.
No, it isn't.
Your work is for the players, as they would use, as
what's that, his name would talk about. Yeah, for people who are awake, able, capable, and getting educated about how the world functions. That's my message is for you who are listening to this.
Yeah, Jim Humble. That's the...
Oh, Jim Humble. Okay.
Jim Humble. Secrets of Enlightenment. It's free, by the way.
Yeah.
It's out of copyright because he died and he said, when I die...
Everything goes.
Copyright's canceled and everything's free. Yeah. All the things I've written.
Mm.
Anyway, you can find it if you're interested.
Yeah.
So your work is not for the masses or the pawns. It's for the players. It's not...
Well, actually, Team Whisper is good for everyone. Whether you're awake or asleep, you're going to get a lot from this book. So I would say some of my work is actually for the masses too.
Okay. I stand corrected.
Yes.
What I meant, I suppose, is your empowerment work.
Oh, yeah. Because I do a lot of other work, like the novels, but also
novels,
those are...
like hugely entertaining. I mean, you wrote it, right?
Yeah.
And then I proofread it.
Uh-huh.
And then I liked proofreading it so much, I kind of proofread it a couple of times.
Yes.
And then we got a professional audiobook reader to read it.
Yes.
And then we listened to it to proof that.
Yes.
Which turned into Let's Stay Up All Night Listening again. More than once.
Yes.
Yes, yes. So it's that's hugely entertaining.
It is.
Yeah.
And it also teaches things, which is great.
It is like a Plato's
if
wall.
If you want.
It's
if
a Plato's wall.
It.
It's a Plato's wall.
Yes.
And a Plato.
So
it's one.
I'd like you to read the last part of the essay, because Team Whisper is that.
It's
the essay.
The equivalent of Shadows on the Wall.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here.
And you only get the message. You only get the messages of the entertainment that you're ready and wanting.
Exactly.
It doesn't force it on you. It doesn't force it on anyone.
That's, I think, my point too.
Mm.
I agree with
you. So the last bit.
Here, you read the last bit.
When I thought about Plato's allegory, and it went on to the bit when the man who had gotten free went back to the cave and tried to tell the people what he had seen without success, I couldn't help but think that all he needed to do was to take some wood, make a fire, cut out some shapes and tell them what reality was, using a reality they already understood and believed in. He could have told them about the world using shadows on the wall.
Yes, that is Team Whisper.
Yeah. And all my books, actually. All the novels. I have so much fun writing them. It's great. And what was I going to say? Also about that, the shadows on the walls. Yeah, because it's like you only get what you're ready for. And I also had to do other work that had nothing to do with empowerment because it interests me, right? So, yeah, you're going to find a lot of stuff. And if you are like curious now about the book, you can find it at ibenznovels.com. So in okay. all one word, ibenznovels.com.
Right. And I think the audiobook part's coming. You can, you know, within a week or two.
Yeah,
I think you might be able to pre-order it even.
You may be able to pre-order the audio, yeah.
We'll see. But either way, you can definitely buy the PDF. It's worth reading it and listening.
Yeah.
Both of the things. Because it's like, you'll read it, and your mind cave, the cave in your mind, mm-hmm. it sets up a pretty nice story.
Yeah.
And when you listen to it with your eyes closed, your cave mind mm-hmm. has another opportunity for another show.
And you know what? I wanted to talk a little bit more about that, the okay. process of writing for me, because, and I've heard a lot of creators, whether it's music or painting, poetry or books, novels, they talk about this, right? That it comes in the same way. My writing process is not about figuring out how to give a message on blah, 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 blah. It's not that. The book, to me, it already exists and wants to be written. And all I do is listen. I listen to the book and the characters telling me what's going on. And I write it. So to me, when I love to read, like when we're lecturians, Laurie and I, we love to read books. And when I love science fiction and fantasy. That's my favorite genre.
I do.
And when I go out and look for a new book to read and I can't find one, or I buy a few and I start reading them and it's like, whatever.
Not this one. Yeah.
Then I sit down and write a book because to me it's like reading a great book.
Nice.
I'm listening to it, you know, like listening to an audiobook in my mind, my inner ears, and I just write it. And if I start kind of trying to change the story because I don't like it or whatever, it stops. And I get what people call writer's block. Whenever I can't write anymore, I go back and I delete the last page or two and I start again and it just starts flowing again. Because it means I went off the script, you know, it went off somewhere else. And then, you know, of course, you know, get to proof it. And then, because it's just like a big, you know, first draft just goes, you know, it's like gets done and it's out on paper. And then to me, the bit that takes the longest is to proof it and rewrite bits that make it more clear and not assume that people know things because I can see them in my head, you know. So put those things that I see in my head on the paper. And make it the continuity, same names, check that I've used the same name for the same character, all these mechanical things. And to me, that takes a lot longer than actually writing the book, because to me, it's not that fun anymore, that part. But, you know, I really want people to get the same joy that I got when I listened to the book as I was writing it. So I go through that part to make it really a really good experience. So I just thought I'd share my process. And I was looking at it from the manipulation of the mind concept. And to me, it was like a clear example of how my mind, personal mind, can't consciously be manipulated, maybe by myself, higher self, or even the books that are wanting to be written, by making my access to books boring. And then finally, I'll sit down and I really want to read a good book, so I write it, right? And to me, that's like a self-fulfilling manipulation. Right. And that's what I meant earlier when I said the manipulation exists, but you need to take charge of it. Mm-hmm. You need to take charge of how you live your daily life. And that can have aspects of you manipulating yourself into doing things. But if you do it consciously, that's the key here. I know what's happening when I'm writing a book. I know how I'm manipulating myself into doing it. Or sometimes the books start knocking at the door and it just bug me until I can't do anything else. And I know that's a form of manipulation, but it's something that I allow at a conscious level.
Right.
Because the end result is so good for me, right? Mm-hmm. I am entertained. And I love to see Larry's face when he's reading something and he laughs and, you know, or cries. He's cried at the books
as well.
Yeah,
there's a few of those, definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
Or he goes, oh, that's embarrassing or whatever, you know, when people kiss and whatever. Oh, what are they doing? Stop it. So, yeah.
Yep.
I like it.
I do too. I wholeheartedly approve.
Yeah.
I'll bring you breakfast every day that you write and every day that you don't, but I'll still bring you breakfast when you write.
Yes. So I hope you enjoy the Woof of Thought and I hope you enjoy the essay.
Indeed.
And if you do like essays and long reads, because the essay has a lot more stuff in it than what we just talked about, go to the Substack and look for my name, Inelia Benz, or a Substack and Woof of Thought will get you there.
Indeed. Oh, I'm pretty sure there'll be an after party for this.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, right. For our supporters.
Yeah, for our supporters that
subscribe
through Subscribestar, right?
And can like work with me now.
$8 a month. Or if you're at Walk With Me Now,
yeah,
we'll have an after party. This usually comes out on a Wednesday. Our normal podcast plus our second hour comes out on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And on Friday, we, you know, get together and talk about it, either yes. The topic or whatever comes up. But usually it's pretty well topically related because, I mean, the topics are interesting.
They are interesting, yeah. So, yeah, that's a great place to go and discuss your insights and listen to other people's insights. And also if you have questions.
Find other players.
Yes. And find other players, other people who other are consciously looking game. At it and perceiving and seeing things like this too. Yeah.
Great. Okay. See you there.
See you there. Bye.